Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. On today's Pardon My Take, Brandon Marshall, wide receiver, six-time Pro Bowler in studio. We also just did a little pre-show that was blows your mind.
It's go
watch.
Shit.
Yeah, go watch on YouTube. It won't be in the podcast, but it will be on YouTube. Go subscribe. We always put a little pre-show, little boys talking before the show. Billy just found out that fact.
Sometimes the pre-show is actually more potent than the regular
show.
There
it is. Yes, that's a fact. All right, we got Billy. You good? He was talking about pre-cum. You got that smile on your face.
Never mind.
Okay. we have Hot Seat Cool Throne. We got FAQs, a great show for everyone. And we're brought to you by our...
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.
Welcome to Pardon My Take, presented by BirdDogs.com. Go right now, use code PMT, get a free beanie. They got great new joggers out. Today is Wednesday, January 26th, and Sean Payton has retired.
Incorrect. Sean Payton has stepped away from the game of football.
Retired for right now.
For right now. I'm like 90% sure I can predict what's going to happen in the next 2 years for Sean Payton.
Amazon.
That's one possibility for right now. Also, they might put him in a booth with Drew Brees and have him do their little thing together. Be like,
or
hey, we're the Saints.
Tell Drew Brees how to actually like do analysis.
Yeah, be the person in Drew Brees' ear telling him everything that he should be doing on TV.
He goes in the truck. That would be great if Sean Payton just took like $125,000 job to be a producer in the truck.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah. So I think he's going to step away and do that for about a year.
Amazon.
And this translates to Mike McCarthy currently being the most fired head coach going into next year already.
Or
so Mike McCarthy is the lamest of ducks right now.
Yes.
Because he knows that this is Sean Payton's job. I'm first reporting it right now. Mike McCarthy has been fired as head coach of the Dallas Cowboys exactly a year from today minus 2 weeks.
Yeah, or bring Sean Payton home to the Bears, which probably won't happen because I think
probably
they were trying to trade for him. And Sean Payton also, I think, told Ryan Pace in 2016 or 15, whenever it was, don't go there. That place is a disaster
yeah,
franchise. But obviously, whenever Sean Payton, the rumors start for the Bears as well, he probably will go to the Cowboys. You're right.
Yes.
But it will be very weird not seeing Sean Payton on the sideline for the Saints. And I hope this doesn't mean Jameis is now losing his job in some capacity.
That would be very unfair.
Jimbo Fisher to the Saints.
It's probably more likely that, remember the end of Any Given Sunday where Al Pacino walked away to start his new franchise with his franchise player, Jamie Foxx,
mm-hmm.
Willie Beeman? That might be what Sean Payton's doing. He might be trying to find the perfect situation where he can set Jameis Winston up to succeed in 2 years.
I'm in for it.
Jameis Winston, Dallas Cowboys quarterback. Whew. Oh, buddy. There's not enough primetime games in the season for that to happen.
I would love that. But yeah, it's going to be weird. It's going to be weird not seeing Sean Payton out there. He was, what? He's got to be the third most tenured? It's got to be Belichick, Harbaugh, Payton, right?
I think
with their team?
That sounds
right. Off the top of my head.
That sounds right to me.
Jake, check that stat.
Andy Reid's probably up there too, which is crazy.
Yeah, but not all the way.
Mike Tomlin is probably up there, right?
Mike Tomlin is up there as well.
Belichick, Peyton, Tomlin, Harbaugh, Pete Carroll.
Okay. All right, so it's close.
I've got
the top three, wrong order.
Just quick stat here. The Saints, without Sean Payton, 244 and 361. With Sean Payton, 152-89 in the regular season.
He's a good coach.
Pretty good. He has over half, well over half, of the Saints' entire collective history of wins.
Yep.
Just in his tenure there. And then
he's
obviously
a really good coach.
9-8 in the postseason. Pretty good. Not bad. And then I think without Sean Payton, I don't have the number from. I think they're 1-4 without Sean Payton.
Makes sense. So. He is the best coach in their franchise by a large, large, large margin, and a very, very good coach. Should we do the Sean Payton Hall of Famer question?
Well, you can't tell the story of New Orleans.
Well, you can't tell the story of football because he did change some rules by, under his study, having people try to kill Brett Favre.
Yeah, without Sean Payton, we don't get the Sean Payton, Kevin James, Adam Sandler movie either.
Yes, so, it was, I think everyone kind of thought it might be coming. Our Saints insider, please credit him, Ben Mintz, said that he had this news on Friday.
Mm-hmm. So he told PFT that.
Friday.
He did tell me that on Friday. He came up to me, Ben Mintz. You might know Ben Mintz if you're not familiar with him already. When I do the Patrick Mahomes voice, that's just Ben Mintz's regular voice.
Correct.
He came up to me.
Voice brothers.
He came up to me and he goes, at PFT, I was wondering, you heard any sources from any of your people in New Orleans that Sean Payton might be out as early as next week. And I was like, I have not heard that, Mincy. He's like, there's a lot of talk. And so he did tell me that on Friday. He established, Hank heard him say that, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much that exact same conversation. And he called it. Ben Mintz says he is the king of New Orleans.
Yeah. So please give him credit.
How have you guys not talked about the retweet heard around the world?
Which one?
Schefter.
Oh, he retweeted
Rappaport.
Whoa. Damn.
Let's give it up for sportsmanship.
I can change and you can change. Maybe Schefter thinking, you know, I'm going to be leaving ESPN soon. I can start giving a couple back here.
Do you think Schefter lets Rappaport break the news that he leaves ESPN?
Ooh, that would be spicy.
I will bring Leroy back from the dead to break the news of Adam Schefter leaving ESPN. Adam, let me know.
He might be co-workers with Sean Payton at Amazon.
I think
Amazon's going to just hire everyone.
I think Adam Schefter is going to go do business with some casino, and he's going to hoard all the information, set the lines.
Fucked up.
It's going to be very fucked. Most importantly, though, it is birthday week.
It is birthday week.
Here at Part of My Take. So next Sunday and Monday,
right?
Me and Big Cat's birthday. I was wondering if maybe to celebrate our birthdays and basically the end of pretty much dry January, Jake, you, Billy, and Big Cat wanted to go out for maybe some margaritas or something this weekend.
Mm.
This weekend?
Yeah, you three.
Can we do it Thursday?
Well, yeah, we could do it Thursday.
Oh, why, Billy? What do you got?
Nothing. Well, hey, I was just saying, like, Hank and Liam aren't allowed because they're not content. But but us,
Billy, you got the whole team.
Us four
can do it. You
got
something, Billy? You got something this weekend we don't know about? Some big plans?
It's been a long-standing plan.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Okay. All right, so you won't be joining us for our birthday margaritas.
Can we do it on Thursday?
Sure. Just as long as those two don't come.
Yeah. Oh, I'm also out.
We're not allowed to hang.
I'm not going, but you guys should go.
Sounds miserable.
That will be... Don't get too drunk. The Bears got a new GM. Ryan Poles. He's about to be announced. Pretty much the news there is that he's from the Chiefs. Chiefs have good players. It's never been a bad thing for the Bears to hire someone from the Chiefs staff. Greeny dropped a fucking fire joke on this hiring.
You say it like you're surprised that Greeny would say something.
He said if the nameplate on the office door said Ryan P, they won't even have to change it.
That's a good joke.
Damn,
you got nuked.
Because everyone has
nuked from orbit.
Everyone has their nameplates be the first name, last initial.
Ryan P. I could actually see the Bears doing that, though.
Ryan P.
I would die for Ryan P.
They also had McCaskey go to O'Hare and pick him up, and it's like, look, he cares. Like, yeah, you know, this is the things are changing. No, but whenever you hire a new GM, it's basically like you have to be in the league circles to actually give an assessment. I hope he's good. I hope he's good, and they're going to do the same thing they did with Pace, where they hire a young GM and then an old coach in, like, Jim Caldwell.
Was he involved at all in the drafting of Patrick Mahomes?
He was. I mean, he was.
There you go.
He's been with the Chiefs for a very long time.
It's crazy how, like, one guy, Pat Mahomes, can make everybody around him so much money and make them all look like geniuses.
Absolutely.
Because they absolutely nailed on that one pick.
Yes. The Chiefs have a lot of, like, talented guys. They have a very, very talented roster. So.
They do. But without Patrick Mahomes, like, It's easy to be a great wide receiver or tight end when you have Pat Mahomes throwing you the ball.
Now, yeah, granted, Kelsey, chicken and the egg. Yeah, those guys are really good.
Kelsey would be good anyways. Tyreek Hill is obviously a special guy. But they nailed, credit to them, they nailed the picking, the selection of Patrick Mahomes. So,
and they also,
maybe you'll get your own Patrick Mahomes.
The Chiefs do deserve credit for revamping their entire offensive line in 1 year. Because that is like, it is kind of crazy when you think about it. Like last year they went to the Super Bowl, they lost in the Super Bowl, he got his ass kicked. Mm-hmm. And they just they figured out a way to get a whole new offensive line. I'm not rooting for any injuries, but Kyle Long is waiting, active, ready to get in. I rewatched the game on Monday night. It was on NFL Network. And I still, with 2 minutes left at the 2 minute warning, like as I'm watching it, I still didn't really understand. Like I knew it was coming, and I still didn't understand how it was gonna happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that the Bills were celebrating with 13 seconds left and everything that happened after Gabriel Davis scores his fourth touchdown. Like, I know. I watched this. But it still doesn't make sense to me.
It really doesn't. The end of that game is just crazy. It's as good as football gets. It really is. I did a lot of watching of all the alternate camera angles and all like the viral content that came out right after the game was over, because I didn't get a chance to do that as we were recording the show, because there's
right.
a lot of stuff that happens. I saw Patrick Mahomes like sprint over to Josh Allen, just give him a giant hug.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that he did after they won that game, was he ran over to Josh and just held him.
These guys respect each other.
And he was like, we're going to be doing this a lot. And like, goosebumps.
Yeah.
Goosebumps. I hope that they are.
It is really crazy to see. I mean, you never know what's going to happen in sports. You never know what's going to happen in football year to year. But to think, like, we might have gone AFC for 20 years, Brady Manning with Roethlisberger and Rivers mixed in there, and it might be Mahomes, Allen with Burrow and Herbert mixing. Like, it's awesome. Lamar Jackson, who we've all forgotten Lamar Jackson because he was injured for half the year, but it's – the league's in good hands. All we're going to say. We're going to get sentimental. It's in good hands.
Can I just say that, like, this probably isn't going to happen, and I feel almost bad putting it out into the universe. What if the Ravens moved on from Lamar Jackson?
Why?
Why?
He got hurt.
They got rid of his offensive coordinator.
I think they're going to stick with him.
I'm just saying.
I think they're going to stick with him.
Just saying. We'll keep an eye on the situation as it develops in Baltimore.
Okay, so you actually have sources, or you just...
No, this is complete and utter reckless speculation.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. He just won an MVP.
I just said keep an eye on it.
Yeah, what were you going to say, Billy?
AB wants to play with Jackson.
Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of what Antonio Brown has to do at this point, just pick one guy and just be like, I want to play with him to make it seem like, hey, he's fixed because he really wants to play with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the only way he gets back.
I mean, how sick would it have been, though, if Antonio Brown had been on the Bills? I'll bet you he feels like a real idiot not going to Buffalo.
Yeah.
That team.
That's
maybe
true.
They could have beaten the Chiefs with Antonio Brown.
I didn't realize Gabriel Davis, too. Like, he's locked up for another year. They're gonna be fine. The Bills will be fine. They have some decisions to make. It does suck whenever you lose front office and coaches, which they will lose some of that. Like, they already lost someone from their front office. They'll probably lose Brian Daboll. The Bears will probably hire Leslie Frazier. So it does suck when that happens, but that's just part of success.
You really think the Bears are going to hire Frazier?
No, I just think they're going to do something stupid.
That would be very stupid.
Yeah, that's what they would do. Yeah. I'm actually fully sold in on Dan Quinn.
So Dan Quinn,
I'm back.
Dan Quinn's
I'm back. I love the guy.
I think that Dan Quinn could work if he went to a place that had a solid quarterback. Like that's what Dan Quinn does. He does defense.
I
don't trust him to make any in-game decisions. Let him run the defense and let him be the rah-rah guy.
I'm ready for him. I'm ready for Dan Quinn. I've come all the way around. It would just be a nice thing to have. I also just want to throw out there, I've listened to like four or five Packer podcasts. It gets worse with time because it's the realization that they're going to have to blow that thing up is very, very fun. So they are. I think they are. I think Rodgers is probably going to have to – he's probably going to go somewhere else.
Go to Denver.
You think Denver?
Denver. They have legalized mushrooms in Denver now.
That's true. Okay. So Denver for Aaron Rodgers.
Are you sure about that?
I actually am sure about this one. The Wisconsin one, I was way off. But, I mean, listen, our fact-checking on this show is you Google something, and then if the giant words come up on the front page of Google, that's what you go with at that point. So they don't have recreational marijuana in Wisconsin. That was a mistake Yeah, Billy?
I think they have religious marijuana.
They have religious marijuana.
The
so
best type.
The Rastafarians are happy.
No, seriously. Favorite.
You heard it?
All the Rastafarians in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Your fact checker's now Billy.
Actually, I'm pretty sure it's near Wisco.
What?
I'm pretty
near
sure
Madison?
Yeah.
Wisco.
I'm pretty sure you get weed in Rastafarian
church.
You just
roll up to the church and grab an eighth?
Yeah, I'm
where
probably,
did you hear this?
Which
my
church?
My buddy who goes to Wisco.
So your buddy who goes to Madison's like, hey, I can get it legal when you're... If you're on a college campus and you can't find weed,
you're a cop.
You're like, what are you? What
I think
are we talking
smoke
about
it
here?
In the church?
why wouldn't you smoke it in your apartment?
I have no idea.
Like, so I'd actually like to talk to a college kid and who can't find weed. Be like, what's wrong with you?
So there are some churches in Madison that distribute marijuana as a sacrament.
Yeah,
that is accurate.
That's okay, the religious.
But Wisconsin city officials are also trying to stop them from doing
wait, like,
that.
Wait, like the body of Christ? Like
you, yeah, you can get weed.
Dude, but wait, that's what Rastafarianism,
on.
That's one of their sacraments, is they smoke a lot of pot. That's it's a Jamaican religion, yeah.
Is your friend really, though, like, it's so sweet here, we can go to this church to get weed? Again,
just,
on a college campus.
You just tell me about this, and I was like, what?
Why can't you just go to probably, like, the guy next door to you in the dorm? To get the weed.
Right.
It's a good story.
You can just start a church and have it give you whatever. Like I'm going to start a church of beer, cocaine, and ska music.
There we go.
Sounds like a bar.
Yeah. And winners. Gives and out winners.
Yeah, and sports on TV.
It doesn't count because it's religion. You can't count losers.
Yeah, no, I literally just made a bar.
Yeah. Yeah, where you can do with private bathrooms for cocaine.
Yes. There's the confessionals.
Yes. The other news story we had besides that, because we're obviously waiting for Championship Sunday, which we're going to have Julian Edelman on Friday's show. The MLB, the Hall of Fame, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens officially not in. I think they go off the ballot now. And we had Tom Verducci pop up and pen an incredible piece of work.
It's beautiful.
Where he said in this piece, he said, talking about Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens not getting the majority, the 75% majority to make it into the Hall of Fame. He said, in fact, for the past 6 years, most voters believe Bonds and Clemens should be in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. A majority is not enough. That's the beauty of the process. Mm-hmm. That's like that's not the beauty of the process. When a majority of people and everyone who watched them play think they should be in the Hall of Fame, and a bunch of fucking loser old writers are holding it up. That's basically the worst process.
You're just describing the Electoral College,
yes,
but for baseball.
Yes.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's really dumb. Barry Bonds should be a Hall of Famer. Barry Bonds is a Hall of Famer.
He's the best baseball player of all time.
You could say that Barry Bonds should be the first. If you were to get rid of everybody in the Hall of Fame, Barry Bonds should be the first person reinducted into the Hall of Fame.
I just don't understand the hypocrisy is so blatant with these fucking writers, and Tom Verducci at the top of the list. Like you vote. I looked it up, right? So amphetamines and greenies, which are just talked about openly and basically talked about in like a poetic way, where people say, "Oh, remember the days when we just would take speed to hit baseballs?" And people are like, "Oh, those aren't performance enhancing drugs." I mean, Daryl Strawberry once said, when you take amphetamines, the ball looks so big, it's like you could hit anything. They also, the innings pitched, this is my favorite, because I know Tom Verducci's voted for some of these guys. There was, so there's 300 innings pitched, right? Has not happened in, like, basically the last 30 years. And it spiked innings pitched, 300 innings pitched in a season. They had in the 70s, 60s and 70s and early 80s, like there were guys pitching 300 innings on the regular because of amphetamines. It coincided with amphetamine use.
Yep.
And those guys are in the Hall of Fame, and I have no problem with it. But then they talk about the steroid era, and they sound like such losers. Oh, yeah, not to mention the fact the steroid era literally saved Tom Verducci's job.
So
it saved baseball.
In the mid-90s, baseball was dead.
Dead.
After the players. Was it a strike or a lockout back in the 90s?
It was a
I think
lockout.
It was a lockout.
Yeah.
It was a lockout back
in
the mid-90s.
They played half the season.
They brought in replacement players, and baseball was dead. The fans were pissed off. They didn't want to be around for the millionaires versus billionaires war. They felt like they were used. What happens over the course of the next 3 years? Oh, yeah, Mark McGwire starts hitting the moon with baseballs on a regular basis. Brady Anderson knocks 50 home runs in a season.
Sammy Sosa and McGwire summer saved baseball.
Yeah.
Tom Verducci probably wrote a million articles about how incredible that story was. He probably got a contract, a new contract from Sports Illustrated, based on the fact that baseball popularity was booming and he was a baseball writer.
Yeah.
And now he's basically saying these guys don't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, even though Major League Baseball has not stricken any of their records.
Well, I would also like to point out that those guys never tested positive for steroids.
They never got suspended. They never got any, all their records stand. So what are we doing here?
They're the best cheaters of all time. Barry Bonds, you can make the argument, Barry Bonds is the best cheater that has ever existed. Not only is he the best baseball player that ever played, even before he was taking the juice, the cream, and the clear, Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer. Then he started cheating, but he started getting away with it.
Yeah.
Never got caught. Not a single time was his piss flagged. He was only named in certain reports by people as someone that received steroids or received
also his head got really
HGH,
big.
And his head swelled up to, you know, like the size of a four-ball tire.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that you can hold that against somebody if they never actually got caught for it.
Well
they got away with it.
It's crazy because Major League Baseball, all their records stand.
Yeah,
it's they stand and they never got suspended, and yet a bunch of fucking old baseball writers are getting to play like judge, jury, executioner on baseball history. The whole thing makes me laugh because those guys saved baseball. Steroid users saved baseball. All these writers wrote about it. They talked about how incredible it was, the most incredible summer of all time. Now we're 25 years later, and the same writers are essentially trying to ruin baseball by being old, stuck-up assholes about a sport that needs younger audiences.
It's a very specialized skill, more so than any other type of journalism, to be a baseball writer.
Yes.
Like baseball, I feel like you're born a baseball writer. You don't just become one. It's in your blood. You come out of the womb with a fedora on, a Diet Coke in your hand, and just a sense of self-righteous,
a little pot belly,
indignation.
Tommy Bahama shirt.
You go around getting scoops from your classmates in elementary school, turning in your notes to the principal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different breed to be
high
a
blood pressure.
You got chest hair and you're pre-diabetic when you're born.
You come out eating a T-bone steak from St. Louis.
Yeah, and you worship at the altar of Bob Costas every Sunday.
Jake, did you know it? Was there a baseball writers class in
it
Syracuse?
Should be a special major.
There was a sports writers class. I didn't take it.
Did you know any baseball writers? We're not asking actual baseball writers, but kids that were like, that could be a...
Is the answer you? No.
Do you think they should be in the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Without a doubt?
Yes.
Even though they cheated and broke the rules. I'm just drilling down.
Even though all their memories have been stripped.
I wouldn't say that.
Even though they're
down a rabbit hole of the homers.
No, they've been deleted off of YouTube.
I'd say worse than that, Jake. The youngsters were shown role models that it was okay to use drugs.
Maybe that's why our society as a whole is falling apart right now. All those kids that grew up on these home run dingers are now coming of age and rotting culture.
I think they
deserve
to be in.
You still?
We're writing a baseball column right now. Isn't it strange that the one thing that could keep our society from falling apart at the seams is baseball?
I want someone to actually connect that, like how we're in a very weird part of American history, and like, you know, social media and economic whatever it may be, because of the kids that grew up watching Barry Bonds and Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire.
Mm-hmm.
Someone make that connection for me.
I'm sure that it's out there.
Yeah. All right. So before we get to Hot Seat Cool Throne, though, one of my favorite things to do is look up Barry Bonds' stats. He's got the best pro baseball reference page of all time. But just throwing a couple out there because they're just fun to say. Barry Bonds has 1,000 more walks than strikeouts in his career. 1,000 plus more. He had 575 plate appearances against Hall of Famers. And he hit .292. And he had just 7 strikeouts against Hall of Famers. 41 times he was walked with the bases empty. Makes no sense.
It's crazy. And
he intentionally walked with the bases empty.
He was also intentionally walked with the bases full.
Correct.
More than once.
Correct. 26.3% of all Barry Bonds at-bats ended with a home run or a walk.
That's pretty good.
And then from 2001 to 2004, 39.5% of all Barry Bonds at-bats ended with a home run or a walk.
You just didn't pitch to the guy.
And then... Here's another one that's just fucking, this one's insane. From 2001 to 2004, Barry Bonds played 573 baseball games. He reached base in 539 of them. 94% of the games he played in that stretch, he got on base.
Holy shit.
It's crazy. It's like, that guy should be in the Hall of Fame.
They should name the Hall of Fame after Barry Bonds.
You can maybe put a wing that explains the steroid error. I don't give a fuck. Barry Bonds is a Hall of Famer. End of story. Fuck Tom Verducci. I would love to have Tom Verducci on to just be like, what's your problem?
He could actually just straight up start his own Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Be like, I'm doing my own. Who's coming with me?
I would love for Barry Bonds to come back for like a day and play in a game to reset his clock. Mm-hmm. So we can really keep the pressure on him.
So what happens now that he's not going to be automatically on the ballot? Could he get written in?
I think it's something where like now he goes to the old timers ballot or something where he could eventually get in, but they essentially just need enough of these old idiots to die and then young people to take over for him.
Because wouldn't it be the most baseball writers thing ever if they just did this to send a message and they kept him off the ballot kept him out of the Hall of Fame for this long, and now that the message has been sent, they gallantly all write his name in next year to let him into the Hall of Fame.
That would be like a Rudy version where they're just all putting their fucking jerseys down.
Exactly. Yeah. Now you've proven yourself worthy of making our Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Young Barrel.
He negged them into we're gonna keep you out for the 15. Now. Only now.
When we say it's time.
Yes. Yes. It's a fucking museum. It's a museum.
Yeah.
That's the craziest part. It's a museum that tells the history of a sport, of America's pastime.
It's probably the best museum to go to with your dad, though.
Oh, yeah.
I would say.
Cooperstown's fun. All right, let's get to Hot Seat Cool Throne. Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. So download the Redfin app today to get started. Tom vs. Time?
Tom vs. Time.
Yeah, what's the deal with the
on his podcast, the Let's Go, that still hasn't come out. He talked about, the end of the season. He made some quotes. Obviously, he knows people are waiting on his decision, but for my personal takeaway, it seems like he's gone.
What?
Talking about Giselle, he said, it pains Giselle to see me get hit out there. She deserves what she needs from me as a husband, and my kids deserve what they need from me as a dad. Team doesn't deserve anything less than my best. If I feel like I'm not committed to that or I can't play at a championship level, then you got to give someone else a chance to play. It's obviously a toss-up. He's the only one that knows what's going to happen, but from right now where I stand, I feel like he's gonna walk away.
Really?
Do you think that's why they're delaying the release of the last episode? They're waiting to make the decision.
That was just like I saw a tweet about it and then I got in the replies. I don't know if that's the case. I doubt it is. It is kind of weird that they didn't, they released one every week and then didn't release the 10th one. But
it would be very funny if the Packers got rid of Aaron Rodgers, or Aaron Rodgers left the Packers, and then Tom Brady's like, I'll play for the Packers this year, and then win a Super Bowl for the Packers.
He would never go to the cold. Back to the cold.
Yeah.
No.
I think he's going to do one more year. I think the Bucs have one more year where they can kick the can down the road with their financial situation, and they can be like, let's do it. Let's bring everyone back. Our good friend Stephen Shea showed me the all-22 of the play. It's crazy how, it's a cliche game of inches, but how these games come down to just one little thing. And if you watched the end zone version that Stephen Shea showed me, Levante David was supposed to blitz. They were going all out blitz, and he just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that was
Would he have got there if he did?
Sue kind of got there,
Sue
and
got
he
to
was
him
going to get. Throw. He was basically going to be on the other side of Sue. So who knows? Maybe he does because Sue's already kind of winning his, or the guy tries to chip Levante David. It's just nuts how those little things decide who's going to win the Super Bowl.
Also, Matt Stafford fumbled the ball earlier on that drive,
mm-hmm,
and almost didn't recover it. Another game of inches situation there. It probably would have been smart for the Bucs to not cover a Cooper Kupp one-on-one with a safety, though.
But if they get home, it's,
The Bills defense was crazy too.
Yeah, see, I actually think the Bucks defense was better than the Bills.
The Bills were the just Bucks. Giving. They were just they backed off like it was the yeah. last play of the game.
If Lavonte David blitzes, they probably get to a point where he can't get that throw off, and you're not giving away because like they essentially were saying we're not going to let you get 20 yards for a field goal here. We're going to try to be proactive and not like give you, you know, we're going to be aggressive here at the Bills. Yeah. That Kelce play when they have Patrick Mahomes saying Kelce do it, it's crazy.
That was a very easy play to defend. It should have been.
Yeah, the Bills
but
the are playing.
That was called was it was ridiculous.
Well, it was
the Bills are playing like they could only not let up a touchdown.
Well, yeah. No, the worst part about the Bills defense in my mind is that it's almost like they forgot that the Chiefs had timeouts because they were playing sidelines instead of like they can go in the middle of the field because they can call a timeout. So the middle of the field was wide open, both that and the Tyreek Hill pass.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Bills fans.
And then my cool throne, I'm not. The cool throne is China.
China?
China.
China.
This made me laugh. I don't know why. It was Lights, Camera, Barstool. They just started streaming the Fight Club movie in China, but they changed the ending. Explosion. What? Is this? Are you going to tell me this is fake?
No, I wasn't. I just didn't know if we wanted to spoil Fight Club for people out there that haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's kind of fucked up, Hank.
This is what happens at the end of Fight Club. If you're in China, all the Chinese AWLs, if you go to the movie theater or stream it, the explosion scene has been replaced with text which states, the police rapidly figured out the whole plan and arrested all criminals, successfully preventing the bomb from exploding.
That's awesome. I love it completely. The end is they blow up every credit card company in the world and wipe out debt. And in this one, it's like the cops got him.
Yep. Cops got him. Stay inside. Don't try any of this shit.
President Xi responded individually and killed all the bad guys himself.
Yeah.
Glory to the state.
That's perfect.
But yeah, it made me laugh.
I love some good propaganda. I really do.
This is great stuff.
Yeah. All right, PFT, your hot seat, cool throne.
My hot seat is Spotify. Spotify's on the hot seat.
Them as well.
Okay.
Because Neil Young put their asses in the jackpot big time. Neil Young, you might remember him from a bunch of hits.
The Lynyrd Skynyrd song.
Yeah, well, yeah, Skynyrd sang about him in reference to Neil Young's song Southern Man about Jim Crow. But Neil Young said, you have to get rid of... Hey, Spotify, you have to get rid of the Joe Rogan podcast or get rid of me.
Oh.
This town ain't big enough for the two of us.
Oh.
Make your decision, balls in your court. I'm going to guess that they're going to keep Neil Young because I don't think that Joe Rogan's doing numbers.
I
think Neil Young brings in upwards of 10,000 listeners a month.
It's more about, like, if you're Spotify, your plan is to try to bring in new, younger listeners.
That's Neil Young.
Neil Young.
Neil Young, yeah.
The
75-year-old Canadian folk singer,
mm-hmm.
I think, is what the kids are looking for these days.
I do actually love Neil Young.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's good.
I'm not trying to yuck your yum. I do not like Neil Young.
Why?
I just not something I'm into.
Okay.
You can be into it. That's fine. I'm not telling you what to believe. I know that Billy absolutely loves your... Are you nervous at all?
No, Billy? I love Neil Young's music, but Neil Young's kind of a shithead.
Is he?
Because of this?
No, because...
Don't fuck with rogues.
He literally has three kids. It's just a whole... Never mind.
Damn. So I'm one kid away from being a shithead?
No, he fucks too much. He abandoned
Wait, a
like
rock
three,
star? No. A rock star?
No.
You know, he like abandoned
kids
like,
not out of, you know what, out of wedlock?
This, I'm going to tell you what Billy's doing right now. Billy has gone into war mode because he threatened his idol, Joe Rogan.
Yes.
So Billy's been reading the replies to replies, finding out why Neil Young is actually problematic. Am I way off on that, Billy?
Find the exact story.
Speaking of that, a guy made a war mode remix that we're going to play at the end of the song. Oh, I haven't even listened to it.
Wouldn't it be?
It's just the email said this isn't a take on me remix. It's just a song about war mode.
You don't like Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young?
I do like Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
There you go. That's Neil Young.
Yeah. I like that. He does the old man take a look at my life.
Yeah.
That's a good song too. Horse with no name. No, that's not Neil Young.
That's not. You're thinking of something else.
Oh, Cats.
You're thinking of Cats in the Cradle.
Yeah.
When I had my son and. Hank played that song, and I was like, Hank, have you ever listened to that song? It basically says that the dad works so much and isn't around that the son then like turns his back on the dad when he grows up. And he's like, oh, what? It's a good song for having a kid.
Good jam.
It's like the worst song.
How funny would possible. It be?
It's a good song.
Neil Young should be like, hey, I'll record every Joe Rogan podcast, but Neil's version, like Taylor's version.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say all the words that Joe Rogan says. But it's Neil Young time, baby. So yeah, Neil Young, see ya. There's the door. I'm sure Spotify's not going to lose any sleep over that decision.
No.
My cool throne is Cincinnati, because I've been inundated with Cincinnati facts this week. Like we said on Monday's show, we don't really learn that much about cities until their sports teams do well.
Mm-hmm.
It's like learning about countries and geography when we start bombing them. So I've had a bunch of people reach out to me. In fact, Barstool Gooch, Robbie Goochman, hit me up, and he gave me some Cincinnati facts because I think he's from Cincinnati. So here's some Cincinnati facts. You ready? The world's last passenger pigeon, Martha, died in Cincinnati in 1914.
Wow.
I think she was the oldest passenger pigeon in the world. Cincinnati fact. They once tried to build a subway system but abandoned it halfway through, so now there's just abandoned tunnels underneath the city of Cincinnati that have never been used.
That's pretty cool.
Cincinnati fact. They're the cornhole capital of the world.
I believe that.
I believe that too. Cincinnati fact. The city was known as Porkopolis in the 1800s. Because of the pork industry, and there are a lot of flying pig statues.
That's cool.
All over the city. Cincinnati fact. Cincinnati fact. Cincinnati requested that they become the capital of the United States back in the late 1700s when we moved it out of Philadelphia, because they said we're more centrally located.
That's good. Can't get attacked.
We said no thank you, but thank you for the offer, Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati fact.
Yeah.
So I think that's the entire history. Oh, and they also haven't killed a beloved primate in almost 6 years.
Whoa.
Cincinnati, they're on a hot streak.
Yeah, so that is a hot streak.
That's I've learned a lot about the city of Cincinnati this
week. Sounds like it. A lot of big time, big stuff.
A lot of big facts out there. I hope I got everything in. And thank you to the good people of Cincinnati for reaching out.
All right, my hot seat is defense and people who love defense, because I don't know if you guys saw, but we had some alternate takes, which maybe we'll put in the takeies this summer, of that game on Sunday night. We had some people saying that they're just playing Madden on rookie mode, and it's not that exciting because defense isn't playing any. There's no good defense, and all these throws are pedestrian against bad defense. So defense is on the hot seat. We need someone to show up with a good defensive performance in these final three games. Otherwise, it's flag football.
It would be incredible. It would be incredible. What if Cincinnati just went out there and held Kansas City to 15 points? We know that's impossible because there's no chance that Cincinnati can beat the Chiefs.
Correct.
But I would love to see a defensive battle.
Yeah.
And do we forget the 49ers and Packers game? There was a lot of defense.
The 49ers have a really good defense.
Very good defense.
Very good defense.
Defense wins championships.
All right, my cool throne is did you guys see that one tweet where someone was like, this must be what it feels like for kids to find out Santa Claus isn't real? And it was a text someone shared from their dad saying defense no longer wins championships. It's like,
oh no.
Damn. That's
brutal. What do you mean about the Santa Claus part?
That's so brutal. For a dad to just be like, wait, you can't win a championship with the defense? You can. The Bucs did last year. Don't worry.
It's such a tough thing because the saying, offense wins games, defense wins championships, is just objectively a cool thing
to
say.
It's great. It's great.
And it looks good on a T-shirt. When your coach says it, you buy all the way in.
Yep.
But it turns out sometimes in life, adults lie to you.
Yeah.
And they don't always even know that they're lying to you.
Yes.
Turns out that scoring points can win games and championships, because guess what? You have to win games to win championships.
But again, I'm saying like that the defense won the championship last year. The Bucs won the championship because of their defense.
So are we saying right now take the under in the Super Bowl?
Take the Niners future. Defense wins championships. That's our defense wins championships pick. My cool throne is the entire Eastern Conference in the NBA because James Harden is upset. So this is going well. I fucking love the Nets. Like, they're going to – Kevin Durant's hurt. Kyrie Irving plays half the games. And I saw the quote. The sources were like, James Harden doesn't enjoy living in Brooklyn, not just because of the climate, but also the state income tax is different than Texas. You think? Like, yeah. You're the one who wanted to get out. So it seems like it's not going so well in Brooklyn.
Not great, but they are the first team to enter the metaverse. So that's huge.
That's enormous.
I have no idea what that means.
Yeah, but they're there.
Congratulations.
Go watch them. Billy.
Mind if I stat pad?
Go off.
Go ahead.
My first hot seat is Britney Spears' father. Apparently, he had like some insane bugging of every hotel room, video and audio that Britney was in, and had like a 24/7 surveillance apparatus on Britney at all times, like some pretty creepy stuff. So, yeah.
He's like Scott Pioli and Todd Haley.
Yeah, and my second hot seat is number two, pencils.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? The SAT and standardized tests are all going online by 2024.
Whoa.
So number two, pencils, out the window. Don't have to bring them around anymore.
Damn.
Almost extinct. That bubbles.
Filling in the bubbles is like very therapeutic.
It is.
When you know the answers. When you don't, it's the worst.
No, it is. Like it's a version of coloring.
Yeah.
For students. Do they even make number one pencils and number three pencils?
I think so. It's a different lead size, right?
I've never seen anything besides a number two pencil.
I actually got a couple.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Some black market pencils.
Yeah.
I got some number
fours. Got them
fours.
From the church. Yeah.
Some Dixons.
Third hot seat.
Ticonderoga.
Doing... Oh, yeah. I was a Pentech guy myself.
You would.
You'd smash pencil fights.
Doing what you want. Brittany Lynn, Patrick's wife, went out and said that.
We're back to the Spears.
No. This is. Oh,
Brittany Lynn. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I've actually come around on this.
I think it's a hilarious move.
At first I was like, this is crazy, but then obviously when you think about the context of the game, like, anything goes.
Yeah.
You won
again,
crazy
popping
game.
Champagne after divisional round, a little dicey.
So
but
what did they say? What
people
say?
That are like flipping out about her.
She was saying that she can't every week it's a new thing that people criticize her for.
She did post this herself. That's what it's like. Yeah, I don't hate the move,
did.
But like no,
here's
she posted it on her Twitter.
I'm getting woke too. Like, this is actually perfect for Patrick Mahomes because they're lightning rods. The Brittany Lynn and Jackson Mahomes are lightning rods where any hate for Patrick Mahomes just goes to them and not Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
It's genius.
He actually comes off looking better.
Right.
Because people have sympathy. They're like, oh man, I can't believe that Patrick has to deal with this. What a good guy. In reality, like, she's probably a pretty normal person. She's celebrating a huge win by pouring champagne. She was probably drunk, as a lot of us would probably do in that exact same situation. Spray people with champagne. It seems like a lot of fun. I don't have a problem with it. I really don't. She's basically the first lady of the city of Kansas City right now.
Yes, and it's actually a testament to how incredible Patrick Mahomes is that the only negative thing you can say about him is you don't like his wife and his brother.
I do.
Like, think about that.
I love the fact that his wife and his brother are like thick as thieves.
Yeah, right. But
they're just running around causing
like
chaos
all the
time.
What's the positives? Oh, he's one of the greatest quarterbacks. Like, he makes mind-numbing throws. He can run. He does keeps the pocket alive. What are his cons? I really don't like his wife's Instagram and his brother's TikTok. Yeah. Okay. What are we talking about?
But guess what?
Yeah.
They're good at getting eyeballs
on
their TikToks.
Correct.
Like, I'm coming around on Jackson Mahomes. I respect how annoying he is.
Yeah, he is. He does do that. All right, what's your cool throne?
Cool throne, SEC football. Joe Burrow made the controversial statement of saying SEC stadiums
in
were
October.
Louder than NFL stadiums.
I feel recently. Like
that was October.
That was an old clip. Yeah.
Which was now brought up by an NFL veteran who thought that it was quite controversial.
But it's getting resurfaced.
Agree,
it's
resurfaced.
This is clickbait. Billy, you're clickbaiting people without context.
I feel like Arrowhead in January is going to be a little different. It's. I mean, some SEC stadiums, we know Tiger Stadium is very, very loud, but that place will be loud.
He didn't have to play against Tiger Stadium, though.
Yes. All right, Jake.
Billy's stat padding kind of screwed me.
Oh, no.
Working here. Billy's that kid who takes two pieces of pizza before someone gets one.
Yeah. Call out the Glennie Balls.
Yeah.
Chick-fil-A.
So I'll go with my hot seat. Penalty flag. So they announced the Super Bowl crew, Ron Torbert. They are collabing. It's not a crew he's worked with. So there's like ref stats.
That's so stupid.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
way to fuck that up, NFL.
So wait, they're taking.
I don't think they've worked together.
Like an all-star game. For
I think it's like an all-star game.
I don't like that, actually.
No.
Yeah.
You get to shine. Yeah. Like, I made the all-star game.
Yeah, but they're going to be trying to fucking show out.
What, being a ref?
Yeah.
I feel like chemistry is more important there.
Yes.
You want a crew that's been solid together. They're greater than the sum of their parts.
Yeah.
Right. And then my cool throne is the AWLs who are golf fans. Brooks Koepka, Max Homa playing together at the Farmers Insurance Open.
Yes.
That'll be fun.
That will be fun.
For Brooks.
They'll probably be talking about us the whole time.
Yeah. One of them mic'd up.
What do you think the line is? Brooks minus five and a half?
I was going to say 7,000.
I love Max.
No, Max has got, dude. Max's tempo, unbelievable.
Yeah. That's what we're doing now. We're complimenting his tempo.
Max, it's just a fact that Max does well the harder we lean on him.
Yeah, exactly. He'll win some. He'll win some fucking fake ass tournament and like. Actually, right around now, this is Max season.
That's what I'm saying.
This is like February and October Max season when everyone stops playing golf.
Max, I just learned what Temple was like a few weeks ago.
Yeah, he just waits till everyone, all the pros go home, and then he's like, I just won $10 million playing the PlayStation Open in fucking Anaheim.
It's like the
on a Tuesday the in Little
Rock,
November.
Little Rock par 3
yeah, right.
9-hole challenge.
Dominant. All right, let's get to our guest, Brandon Marshall, in studio.
Before we get to Brandon Marshall, I want to talk to you guys about Roman. Most guys have tried different ways to last longer in bed, but thinking about baseball doesn't always work. The folks at Roman, an online men's health company, are changing the game. They've got Roman Swipes. It's the secret to longer-lasting sex. Roman Swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, fast-acting, but they don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in discreet, unmarked packaging, and each swipes packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you need it. They're super easy to use. Just take the swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it. Go to GetRoman.com/take. Get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. That's GetRoman.com/take. Now here is Brandon Marshall.
Okay, we now welcome on a very special guest. It is 6-time Pro Bowl wide receiver, Brandon Marshall. He has a podcast, I Am Athlete. He just had Antonio Brown on it. He's also on Inside the NFL with our good friend Julian Edelman. Doing everything in studio. Good to see you, man.
What's up, big cat?
I mean, last time I saw you, I was saying we were at Jay Cutler's wedding. It was a good time. That was probably the last time I'd seen you.
Yeah, and the last time I seen him.
Yeah. Oh, I want to get right into it. Yeah, no. You guys got to get back together.
What's the secret of like making up, right? Like, because you guys.
It's time. Just time.
Just time.
Just time heals all wounds. Because we and I didn't talk for a few years. Right. And then time just healed it all. And then ended up in the same city in New Orleans for the national championship. And it was like we hadn't missed a beat, though. So that's, I have hope for you guys.
Well, of course. That's the Cuddy. That's Cuddy.
Yes.
No, that would be legendary. I would love to. You know, sit down with Jay on I Am Athlete, or his new podcast is pretty dope.
Yep.
It'd be cool to sit down with him and reunite and kind of relive some of those old moments, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah.
Was it like off and on, hot and cold while you were playing with him?
No. I mean, we're like brothers. So, I mean, I wouldn't say it was like lovely all the time. You know, we fought all the time, but there was two rough patches when Josh McDaniels came in and put him on a trading block, and he found out about that, and then he just kind of went, you know, MIA on everyone, so no one heard from him then. And then when he was playing for the Chicago Bears, that last year was brutal on everyone, and so that took a toll on our relationship, and that's really what did it. But you know what's interesting is when you're locked in, you're in a $16 billion business, and you're making millions of dollars. You know, the pressure that we put on ourselves and our relationships is unbelievable. I find myself now, like, going back and, you know, hitting up some of my old teammates. Like, man, you know, at the end of the day, we're still brothers. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, that we got to go in there and win. And there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of tension. But now it's over. Like, we're going to hold on to that?
You get a little distance between it, and you can look back and be like, "That we went through some shit together." And in the moment, there's all the tension, all the stuff that happens on a day-to-day. But you can look back on it and be like, this guy was – We're actually brothers coming out of it.
Yeah, it's football. I mean, at the end of the day, it's football. Like, okay, you know, Jay and I on the football field, it was football. Now football is no longer there.
Right. And I know you've talked about it, but, like, you got drafted the same class as him, to our good friend Tony Scheffler also.
Love Tony, yeah.
Second-round pick that draft. You guys went through life experiences that probably you can't, like, no one else understands it. Yeah. You know, Tony said that you guys, after your first year, went and trained in Atlanta in the summer together. Like, those things where you have all your whole entire NFL career in front of you, feels like the possibilities are endless and you guys are all grinding together. You can never take that away.
Yeah, I mean, you have teammates and then you have brothers. You know, Jay and Tony Scheffler, they were brothers. Elvis Dumer, if you can throw him in there. I mean, we're inseparable. You know, whether it's the offseason training together, sitting down during the year and say, okay, what are we going to do this year to get better together? You know, those moments, hell, the first time I ever had a red wine was with Jay Cutler. You know, that there was a lot of firsts with Jay, you know, and Tony. So, you know, we're brothers, and you know, that's the difference between some cats in the locker room. Some dudes is just your coworkers.
Yeah. What so you're podcasting now, you're on TV, you had Antonio Brown on your podcast. What was your biggest takeaway from that? Because there's obviously a lot has been said, like, oh, Antonio Brown's crazy, oh, all this. What, when you got to sit down with him man to man and you walk away from the interview afterwards, what was your takeaway?
He's a superstar. Absolute superstar. I mean, it was as if we were sitting down with an entertainer, you know? You know, I think the difference between sports and entertainment, well, the biggest difference between sports and entertainment is it's a team. No one's bigger than a team. No one's bigger than that logo. No one's bigger than that mission. Entertainment, right? Like, and it's just ball, right? Entertainment, you got characters, you know, you have this, you put this persona on, and, you know, you could see him kind of get into that entertainment persona, that character. You know, he knew the cameras was on. Everything mattered, from his haircut to how he dressed, like all of that. You know, that's kind of counterculture to a lot of ball players. So I think, you know, that's a big topic there, because, you know, will we see more Antonio Browns? You know, with social media evolving and everybody's a brand, you got Neil name, image, likeness now. Mm-hmm. So you can start paying guys at high school and college. So they're going to come in already thinking about business, thinking about their podcasting now.
Yeah.
Right. They're on YouTube. They're now acting like influencers. And I think that's counterculture to sports. But hell, it is a big business.
I think in certain leagues, it's probably easier to get away with doing stuff like that than it is in the NFL sometimes, because your roster is so big, and it has football more so than other sports, I think, has the mentality of, like, either fit in or fit out, you know, like, get out if you're not going to be part of the team, if you're not going to, like, submit yourself for the good of the rest of the team, unless, of course, you're extremely, extremely talented like Antonio Brown is. And he's gotten away with a lot, being able to do a lot of that stuff over the years and be like an entertainer and have the spotlight on him, because he's like, you know, top three, top four receiver in the league. Right now, since it's at the end of his career, do you see any team taking a chance and bringing him in next year?
Yeah, I know he wants to play. You know, that was a question that I asked on the show Monday. You know, do you want to play? Do you want to continue? He said, absolutely. You know, and I just, you know, I was, one of the things I was trying to get across to him was, you know, if we're going to play ball, because you're right, you know, if you're going to play ball, you have to learn how to operate within the constructs of that team, that system. And so for me, it's hard, you know. I think he has a 10% chance, and I love Antonio, because we share this, a locker room, meaning that fraternity, the NFL, and, you know, guys aren't perfect, but at the end of the day, you know, he put himself in this situation, and, you know, I would say a 10% chance. You know, look at the market for him last offseason. You know,
I mean,
where
the Bucks could have used him on Sunday.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm talking about, well, just, yeah, of course.
What did you think about him, like, kind of that post he had after the game, where he's, I mean, if you're a Bucks player,
right,
and you put up with some of the things that come with Antonio Brown, because whatever you think, he definitely causes a media stir,
right?
And then you see him kind of clowning you after you just lost a heartbreaking game. That kind of sucks, right? Like, you're talking about brotherhood and, like, these guys in the locker room. I thought that was kind of bullshit.
Well, I mean, look, there's what, you know, there's almost 100 people in that locker room, right? You got players, you got coaches, you have support staff. You know, some guys will laugh at it, you know, if we're being honest. Some guys will be like, oh, that's just him trolling. And then some guys, you know, may hold on to that and never talk again, would never talk to him again.
Yeah.
You know, because you're right. That is, it's like, damn, bro, you were just with us a couple weeks ago. We're right. All in this together. So I think you'll get a mixed bag.
Yeah. It's a good point, that how many different people are in an NFL locker room, and how, like, different walks of life. What was the best locker room you were in, team wise?
Yeah, the Chicago Bears, my first year.
I was gonna say, not the last year.
Hell no. the first year in Chicago, and I was never in a locker room like that. I never was on a team where I looked to the sideline and said I didn't want to let those guys down. You know, there were so many times Jay and I in our offense, you know, would go three and out, and Lance Briggs, Brian Urlacher, Charles Peanut Tillman, Julius Pepper, Izzy, and so many others would literally meet us halfway there and still shake our hands saying, get them next time. You know, every day we played ping pong. You know, we played so many games. We did so many things off the field, which made the bond better on the field. And I think that was one of the reasons, you know, we folded the way we did after Lovey was gone, because they disrupted that locker room.
Yeah.
There was nothing like that. I mean, it was unbelievable what Brian Urlacher and those guys created there in Chicago.
So you were in two spots where that kind of happened, where, Lovey gets fired and they bring in Mark Trestman, and everyone loved Lovey. And then you were also in Denver when McDaniels comes in. Both guys didn't pan out. What was the mistake that those two coaches made on their first go around, where it's like they just don't get how to manage this, the entire thing?
Yeah, Josh McDaniels, brilliant from X's and O's. There's no one better. You're going to be prepared. You're going to know what's going to happen before it happens. Excellent there. I think Josh's biggest downfall during that time, that era, was his people skills, his leadership skills, right? That was the biggest thing there. Coach Trestman, I just think that he didn't have a chance because, you know, Lovey leaves in that locker room that I talked about, and he started doing things a little differently, opened up the locker room. He wanted to create that, you know, we're all in this together, you know, like that Google, Facebook type of work environment, which a lot of coaches are adopting that now. So he was, I would say he was early.
He's just ahead of his time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, Coach Trestman and I talk all the time, and we had this conversation on his podcast, a couple of months ago.
He's got a podcast?
Yes, but it's more in business and leadership.
Got it.
He's a professor at University of Miami. He's doing some amazing things there. But, we were real. We had an open conversation, and one of the things I said was, you know, it's probably a little too early to, you know, do the things that he did. He was trying to do with the locker room. And you had guys that weren't buying in on the defensive side, which made it extremely hard.
I've kind of changed my thought process on the Bears and the NFL in totality, that, like, coaches can fail, but it's really the organization fails them. I'm now starting to realize, like, the Bears are screwed no matter what. Do you know what I mean? Like, I almost feel bad for Trestman at this point. I was mean to him then.
Right.
But, like, I look back and I'm like, it's just a clusterfuck ahead of on top of him. Right. So he, like, there was never a structure that was put in place to have him succeed.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, yes. I mean, our there's so much to that. Yeah. I do think that the McCaskies, you know, they're so passionate and they're like football royalty. But they're so stuck in the 1950s.
Yes, yes.
And they got to get with the times.
Yes.
And there's a couple organizations like that. I talk about the Giants that way as well. I love that organization. And, you know, a lot of people can study, like, some of the ways they move. But now it's time to progress and move forward. So the McCaskies are one of those organizations. I mean, the Bears is definitely one of those organizations. It's like, all right, it's time to get it.
Yeah. You have to kind of shrink your ego if you're one of the older families that's owned a team for forever. Because, right. You know, when you were coming up, when you were in your younger years, business was done a certain way. Yeah. Maybe you had a little success then, but you have to admit that you don't know shit about football anymore.
Right.
And that you need to let somebody else that's a little bit younger and has, like, a fresh perspective come in. I think a lot of times very rich, very successful people have a hard time doing that, just like admitting that they don't have what it takes anymore, and letting somebody else help them.
For me, the McCaskies is less about the football stuff, because they let the football guys do their football thing, right? It's more so like, we're talking about socks here. You know, like, oh, this is how we wore in socks for 50 years. Well, hell, you got these young guys that want to dress the way they want to dress.
Right.
They want to listen to the music they want to listen to in the locker room, and they're just trying to put people in boxes. So I just use that as an example. I know it's like minute and it's really nothing, but it's literally a lot of little things that makes it uncomfortable for guys to go there.
And we joke because it's cliche. But culture matters. Like, culture, I'm sure you can talk about it, but, like, culture in different – you've been on different teams, different locker rooms. Like, culture matters a lot when it comes to playing football and playing that full season.
Right. Have you been in Mr. CC's on the corner down here?
No, where's that?
I just made it up.
Okay.
That's like that, Mr. CeCe's is like a little mom and pop little pizza place, right?
Yeah.
That's it. And that's how the Chicago beers are like phenomenal. Yes. Phenomenal. Yes. Like when you talk about culture, the culture is good as far as like you go in there, nice people, they're amazing. You know them. Hell, they might be on the elliptical next to you working out. Mr. McCaskey, George McCaskey, he parks all the way in the back, and you ask him why you parking in the back. He's because I want everybody else to park, get the first. Amazing people, you know. So, but now we're talking about a $16 billion industry. Yes. You gotta bring in some people that really know what they're doing.
Yes, it is. You're right. I've said many times it's the mom and pop, like they that the Bears is all they know.
Right.
It's the family business.
Yep.
It's not like a lot of other ownership groups
this is
where
it.
It's like they made a lot of money, then they bought a team.
Right.
And it's almost like a toy to them.
Yeah.
This is it. But this yeah.
It. That would have been very awkward if you had been like, yeah, I did. Yeah, I've been to CeCe's.
Mr. CeCe's right down the street.
Completely made up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It sounds very familiar. Like,
it
that's
does.
A perfect.
I could see there being. I thought for a second there was a CeCe's.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that. I'm going to Google it right
before
now.
Before we transition, what's the inspiration behind this set?
We're just messy slobs.
We get our weight up.
We work out. Do you still work out?
I do.
Yeah. Could you think
House of Athletes, shameless plug.
It's we decided that we would get a squat rack put in here so we could work out in between podcasts, and guess how that went.
We didn't go well.
Not well at all. Not well at all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's kind of a shit show in here. We understand that.
We also like to keep it a little bit messy in here because it really downplays the expectations from any guests that we have coming in. Wow. Like, as long as we don't completely screw up the interview, then they'll be like, all right, at least I got out of that messy room alive.
Yes,
you know?
Unbelievable.
What, in your transition to being a should I call you a podcaster or a show host? Just an entertainment mogul.
Yeah.
Is there anything like what has been the hardest part of that transition coming out of the NFL and, you know, changing and making your entire career in front of a microphone, in front of a camera?
Yeah, actually, Bonnie sitting next to me, our chief of staff, we were just talking about this. In March, we're going to be a part of a business combine, where a lot of NFL guys are going to come in and, you know, they get to learn business. Caleb Thornhill's putting something amazing together for these guys. And, you know, it was like, all right, they're going to spend 4 days with us and just shadowing. It's like, all right, one of the things that we got to hit is that transition and putting in a routine, right? Like when I was 6 years old, once I got to middle school, there was a itinerary, there was an agenda set for me until I retired. Even in the off season, I knew what I was going to do. I think the hardest thing for me in the 2.5 years that I've been out is setting that agenda. Like, when am I going to podcast?
Right.
When am I going to develop another show? When am I going to check my emails? When am I going to meet with my team? Right. Like, we have almost 100, you know, partners and employees. Right. So it's like learning that cycle is critical. That's what got us to that pinnacle, the pinnacle of football, you know, and is that routine. And now you got to put in another routine. I mean, that's the thing that makes you successful is being able to put a plan in place and do it consistently.
Yeah. Consistency, I'd say, is like one thing that was, because we talk to a lot of athletes that are, you know, making their transition from, you know, their post-playing career, and they want to get involved in the podcasting game. And they start up a new podcast, and then, you know, they'll do it like they'll say, we're going to do this a few times a month. So they put it out like, you know, 1 week. They take 2 weeks off, come back out of nowhere. There's another episode. If they commit to a schedule that's like, we're going to release every week, or if you're going to do it every month, just say we're going to do it every month and let people know when to expect it. That's a huge key that I think a lot of these guys are missing out on. It's just like, let your audience know when to expect content from you.
Yeah, well, you got to understand, athletes, you know, we're used to putting up content, an action shot, and it gets thousands of likes, and, you know, a video, you get thousands of views, maybe millions, right? So we're used to that. And then when you make that transition and you go into entertainment or podcasting, and now you get 10, 20 people. Like, when we started our podcast, I Am Athlete, like, when the first season, we had 84 people in the waiting room watching, or people watching live. Now we're getting up to like 22,000-25,000 at times watching live.
Right.
Right. So it was hard. My New York barber is the one that told me to keep going. I called him one time. I was like, man, I'm done with this shit. It's like 84 people watching right now.
Right.
You know, you got to think about that. And he was like, that's good for you. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, I'm glad you're being humbled right now. You're so used to millions of people watching. You need to be consistent. You need to stick to it. I was like, damn, you're right. And sure enough, the last show, we broke through. We hit 500,000 views in like a couple of days. I'm like, oh. And we just kept going. In season two, we just kept going. We kept going. And consistency is critical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's absolutely true. Like being there for your audience time in and time out.
And that's Jose, by the way. Jose is my new
barber. Shout out, Jose.
I'm going to get back to Brandon Marshall in a second. But before we do.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
I assume you watched the games yesterday, so we're taping this on Monday after an insane divisional round. Who do you think, like just watching them, Mahomes, Allen, maybe throwing Burrow in there, like, rank the young quarterbacks right now in the game. Because it's crazy how Jimmy G.
You're right.
Jimmy G just wins.
The guy wins.
He just wins.
Games.
But, like, it's nuts to watch these guys and be like, hey, I think we're – it's cliche to say, like, oh, we're in good hands. But, like, this is awesome that we're going to maybe have Mahomes versus Allen every year for the next decade.
Yeah, you heard Tony Romo and you heard guys on Monday, you know, talking about, oh, this was the Allen and Mahomes duel, that back and forth. It was the greatest display of quarterbacking we've ever seen, right? And they're right. It's so true. If I had to rank these guys, Patrick Mahomes.
Number one, easy.
Easy. It's not even a debate. Patrick Mahomes, you know, Josh Allen, even if he had won that game, he would have started the conversation. But, I mean, you got to go win a Super Bowl, and you got to go do what he's done consistently year after year after year. So he's number one for me. I'm a huge Josh Allen fan. I've been saying it for 2 years. I mean, you got to think about where he comes from. The kid didn't even have a chance in college, and look who he was throwing to in the competition for him to be able to link up with Brian Daboll and do what he's done the last 2 years is remarkable. I like Joe Burrow, Smoking Joe. I mean, did we not know he was going to be great when he won the national championship and he had a stogie in his mouth after?
Yeah, he's got like the quarterback swagger where you look at him and you're like, okay, I think his whole team just loves him.
Right.
Like they all just are like, we're going to ride with this guy.
You know what? I said this yesterday and I hate because I know you're friends. You're like best friends with Jay.
Well, no, you're friends with him too.
Yeah, well, it's like, what is it like when it's like a sabbatical? We're on a sabbatical.
Yeah, yeah,
taking a break.
You're
seeing other people.
You know, I was watching Joe Burrow's interview yesterday, you know, just his personality and also like his confidence / cockiness. Uh-huh. And I was like, that's what Jay was supposed to be.
No, he was at times.
Well, Jay, I mean, what I'm saying? Like Joe Burrow, really, he's a savage.
No, he is a savage. He's crazy.
I think the problem with Jay was sometimes after a bad loss or a bad string of losses, he still had that personality. And he'd still put that out there where he was like, I'm cool, I'm Jay. Like, you know, it's one thing to do that if you're coming off a nice run like Joe Burrow's on. Right. Or you just won a national championship. Like, you can ooze all that swagger and be like, okay, I'm the man right now, so I'm going to act a little bit like I'm the man. But if you do that enough after losing seasons, people are, you know, it gets tiresome a little bit.
Do you know what the comparison, though, that does work between Joe Burrow and Jay is their toughness. Like, Jay never got the credit that he deserved for his toughness, and I think Joe Burrow's the type of guy where it's like, he got sacked 9 times. And he's just like keeps getting back up, keeps making plays.
Yeah, I mean, Jay was super tough and super competitor. Yeah, it was phenomenal seeing Jay get hit and then bounce back up. Don't say anything. You don't know if the guy's going to make it to practice on Wednesday and Thursday, and he's out there. And then the circumstances. You look at that year with Mike Martz in Chicago.
Yeah.
Probably hit the most ever. Mm-hmm. You know, it was brutal.
7 step drops.
Yeah.
9 step drops.
But the NFL is in great hands right now. You know, even you have the young gun out there, Justin Herbert, as well. You can throw in there, be exciting to see
Lamar.
What he does next year. Lamar Jackson.
I know, we kind of forgot Lamar.
Kyler Murray.
Yeah. Right? Do you think Kyler Murray might be too short?
No,
he blocked me on Twitter, so I don't care what did. I say
now.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he made it to the NFL. He's balling. Like, I mean, what, he threw for over, what, 3,000-4,000 yards? I mean.
Yeah, no, he's really, really good.
Right. I think he just needs
every
new,
now and then he looks
new coach.
Too short.
I don't think that Cliff is the guy to take him to the next level. I think that Cliff has proved time and time again that he's actually, he's not that great of a head coach. He can do some exciting things early on in a season, but once there's a little bit of tape out of what they're doing that year, teams just catch up to him.
How much does that suck when, like, not, don't name names. You don't have to blast anyone.
I like naming names.
Okay.
I'm real. I just like.
Okay, yeah, you can name names.
Like, at people, you can at me. Let's have real conversations.
Could you tell the difference in, like, your coaches and offensive coordinators and coaching staffs, like, the guys who were putting you in a great 100%. Position to succeed, and then the guys you're like, they don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, 100%. We talked about a guy earlier, Josh McDaniels. Never been more prepared in my life.
Really?
You know, for a game. Yeah, Josh McDaniels was excellent, right? So you absolutely get it, and you understand. Like, even this past weekend, everyone's saying, oh, one of the greatest weekends of football ever. And if you just narrow it down to, like, one thing, what was the one thing that made this great? It was situational football. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. 2-minute offense. 2-minute defense. 4-minute offense. Can we run a clock? Are we going to stay in bounds? What about special teams?
Yes, Packers.
Right? Yes, situational football. Some of these plays, the Kansas City Chiefs, the little drop off to Tyreek Hill, and then you had two guys go blocking, then he scooted up the field, then he got down. Like, those are things that you work on in camp. You implement that in camp, and then you just work on it maybe once a week. You just touch it. And then all of a sudden, when you need it, it's there. But can you execute? Guys like Josh McDaniels, you know, those are things that they do it better than anybody else, right? So you're always prepared. And then you go on some other teams like, shit, you go ask the coach, well, you know, third, you know, this fourth quarter, we enter in the fringe area, 2-minute drive. All right, you know, game's on the line. We're down by 3, right? What defense are they going to call? And give me the percentage. Josh McDaniels is going to look at you. He's going to say, oh, yeah, you entered in the fringe, fourth quarter, game's on the line, down by 3. Yeah, it's probably going to be, you know, 50% chance. It's 50% of the time this defensive coordinator is going to go cover 0,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And so here's our answer to that.
And then it must feel like a superpower when you see that, when you see it on the field after you learned it all week.
100%.
Yeah.
You're ready. I mean, and some coaches be like, hey, this is what I think they're going to do, and, you know, be prepared for this. Josh McDaniels, and I would assume that it's like that in New England as well with Bill Belichick. It's like they come in and they say, this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, jackasses, this is what's going to happen. You know, it's no, don't even think about it. Just do this. Do your job. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah. I think you like Josh McDaniels because he threw you the ball 21 times in a game one time. That's what I think. I remember that game.
It's Kyle Orton.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Like, do you ever look back at, well, let me ask you this. In the moment, when you make 21 catches in a game, you start game planning for the next week and you're like, if I get anything less than 20 catches, it's a complete failure. Like, did that reset your expectations of what that offense was going to look like?
No, it was that was an anomaly, and I knew it. Before the game, I went up to Michael Smith, used to be on ESPN, and I had my little headphones on. I said, bro, I'm telling you this because I want you to report on it later. I said, this is going to be the best game I've ever played in my life, right? So I just felt it. Like, I was, like, crescendoing all week. And asked Jay about it, crescendoing. I was crescendoing all weekend, and I was just speaking it into existence. Like, yeah.
So you were just telling Kyle Orton, you're like, hey, you're going to throw me the ball 30 times.
Mm-mm. Yeah. I was just like, I didn't know how it was going to look. I didn't know if it was going to be 20 catches. I didn't know if it was going to be 250 receiving yards. I didn't know if it was going to be 5 touchdowns. Had no clue. I just felt really good. But Jay-Z just dropped an album, and I'm a big Jay-Z fan. And so all week I was just like, everything he does is like effortless, right? And so I was just like, that's all I was listening to. That's all I was channeling. And so I, you know, if you go back and watch that game, after every catch, I would just get up and I would go back to the huddle. And what I was saying was, like, this is what I do, right? Like, this is easy to me, right? Yeah. So I wasn't talking trash. You know, I wasn't celebrating. It was just getting up, handing the ball back to the ref.
What's talking about playing the wide receiver position, I love to talk to athletes and ask just a simple question. What is the one part of the job of being a wide receiver that like fans don't pick up on? That the common fan, us idiots sitting on the couch, we're like, how can you not do that? It's like, no, that's not how it works.
Right.
What is that one thing?
That's a hard question. What's the one thing?
Like, you know, whether it be like how, like route running or whatever it may be, like the one thing that you don't, people don't, the misconception about being a wide receiver that you don't really understand.
Right. I don't know.
I'm always shocked. Like, I throw one out there. Like, body control and the ability to get like feet down is so incredible. Like, we see it and it's routine in our eyes, but you don't understand the muscles that go into that.
Right.
That just
right.
like blows your mind.
Right. Yeah. I think like, yeah, Travis Kelce this weekend, you know, that back shoulder game winning. Was it the game winner?
Yes. Yes.
It was the game winner, right? It's, he ran a out and then up, and then he had the back shoulder there. But, you know, little things like that, that play doesn't work if he's actually running that route anticipating or running it for the back shoulder. You have to run it to win, like as if it's going to be over top, right? So you run it that way, and you let the quarterback throw the ball there, and then you got to be, you got to put your body, you got, it's like open up your hips. We call it open up your hips. You got to open up your hips so you can turn around and make that catch. That's hard for a lot of guys to do. You would think that, oh, that's just a wide receiver. That's just a Hall of Fame tight end. You know, yeah, that's what he's supposed to do, and any guy is supposed to do that. No. That's why you only see a handful of guys able to do that. In today's game, you got Odell Beckham Jr. You see what him and Matthew Stafford been able to do over the last 6-7 games, whatever it's been. So I think understanding route running, understanding, you know, just the nuances, but you know, in route running and understanding coverage, because there's so much that goes into it. Because that route changes also if it's not man-to-man, if it's zone, what do you do? So there's a lot that you have to think through and work through within, you know, a second. Quarterback, all right, we can go I right, Z zing, we're going to go, you know, Z pop, X prick, on two, ready, break. And then you go out there, now you got to see what is my linebacker, what is the safety, what is the corner doing, all right? Now, okay, it's on one. Oh, now I got to go in motion. Oh, shit, the safety came down, so now that changes. Said, hoop. Oh, the safety went back, what am I doing, right?
Right.
So it's a lot. In your head.
And you're right. That Travis Kelce touchdown looked like routine.
Yeah.
It looked easy because that's what they make it look like.
Right.
Like, we watch that game, we're like, that's just easy. That's Travis Kelce.
What about when you make, you jump into the air to make a catch and you got to get 2 feet down? That to me is sometimes the most amazing thing that receivers are able to do nowadays,
right.
Is they're just able to let their entire body kind of go limp as they're twisting in the air. Just focus on getting the toes down. Is it something that you think about, like, after you secure the ball in the air? Does your brain actually tell you, like, okay, now it's time to get the feet down? Or is it something that you've worked on so much that it's almost like an instinct at that point?
Yeah, it's hard, man. That question's come up a couple times over the last month. I don't know. I never thought of – the only time I ever thought about it was in college. In college, I never understood why college receivers – would only, you know, okay, the rule is get 1 foot in. And they would just focus on getting 1 foot
try
in.
Try for two.
Yeah, for me, yeah. It was like, I'm going to the NFL.
Yep.
Right.
Like, I'm working on that shit today. You know what I'm saying? So I never understood it, you know, why college dudes did that. I'm like, no, like, let's play NFL ball right now. And so, like, that's the only time it ever came up. Yeah, you work on it. There's drills that you do. But I think, you know, the Odell, you just have a feel. You know, that's the best way I can describe it. There's some guys don't have a feel, you know, and it's guys that can do that. Guys also understand, like, okay, I got this end cut. It's quarters. This guy's driving down on me. You can feel everything around you. It's, I don't know. It's just like, it's almost like an innate ability. Almost.
Yeah. Hank's a big believer of if you can touch it, you can catch it. Is that true?
Yeah. Good question.
Yeah, it's kind of. I hate that. It's terrible.
Reductive. Sorry,
yeah,
Hank,
but it's true.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, because when you say, it, you "Yeah, I have it. A football here,"
yeah, right. Oh, there's a small one underneath you.
Yeah, it's like when you say "touch it," because like a lot of times, oh, you touch it, that's a drop, right? Yeah. Like, what happens if it just touched the 2 fingers?
Yeah,
here,
you should have
right?
caught it.
That's
it,
what Hank's
like,
always saying.
Like, yeah. So Hank, this is you want. Where's Hank? Hank, you want me to catch this, Hank?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm gonna pull up the play. Actually, there was. Do you remember the Washington football team Giants game? Daniel Jones had an overthrow. I said it was a bad throw, and everyone was like, "The receiver touched it. he should catch it.
Get it up.
And
yeah,
I got
get the play
absolutely
up.
Dunked on. And I was saying what right. you're saying. It was a bad throw. It was an overthrow. Right. Just because he touches it doesn't mean you can catch it.
Okay.
And now, because yeah, I got actually, dunked on yeah. so hard, I have to just remind people of how bad I got dunked on.
Yeah, anytime.
If you can touch it, you can catch it.
Anytime it like barely grazes a wide receiver's fingers, Hank will be like, well, I thought it was if you touch it, you can catch it.
Gets so paid millions of dollars.
He's
to
on
ca-
your
make
side,
that catch.
Actually. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, he
yeah.
is.
No, yeah.
He thought it was. Yeah, we need to see this play. I want your reaction.
And then also, there's, and this is something right that, you know, that some people may not see, but a lot of times there may be some trash balls, right, and the wide receiver will put himself in position, actually, give himself an opportunity to make a play, right. But then he drops it, and it's like, oh, it hit his hand. It's like, no, you don't understand what it took for him to actually flip his hips.
Right.
He's 60 yards down the field. The ball was supposed to be thrown over his right shoulder. It was thrown outside over his left shoulder. He flipped around, tracked the ball down, and tried to keep his feet in bounds. You know what I'm saying? Also, the ball got lost in lights as well because there's a lot of – most stadiums, there's a blind spot, right? You have these huge lights there. And so those are things that people don't see. It's like, oh, he just dropped the ball. It's like, man, that was impressive for that dude just to even get his hands on the ball.
Yeah, you got it. All right, this is good. We're gonna get the official judgment of was this a bad pass or should he have caught it?
Okay. This is great. Danny Dimes drops it. Boom.
It's for all the marbles for Hank here.
Hold on. So what did you say?
Overthrow.
You said overthrow?
He said bad pass.
Uh-oh.
Oh, snap.
Could he have caught that?
Does he get paid millions of dollars to make that catch?
Could he have caught that?
Oh, yes. He's supposed to catch that. What are you talking about? Even
if
this
you can
one.
Touch it, you can catch it.
Yeah, even that one, a lot of times, too. Even this, right? And this is what separates the good from the great. Even if the ball was,
that's an overthrow.
Say if it was another yard out in front of him.
Can dive.
That's when you know, one hand. Extend. Because now you can... I can extend more if I do this, if I open up my shoulders, right?
Right.
Here, I'm short. So that's why you see a lot of guys like, why did he throw out one hand? Well, because that's what I meant. He's getting to the ball. No, he absolutely – that should have been like – yeah. Come on.
Damn, Hank, come on.
You lose.
Watch football for me one time, Hank.
Fair enough.
Now pull up the Antonio Brown drop.
That's why Hank is the producer. Hank is one of the producers on this show.
Go ahead.
I saw that you played a game with our friend Frank Gore when he was on your podcast where you asked him to name, you know, players that maybe he had played in the league with, maybe he hadn't. I got a question for you kind of along similar lines. Can you name every quarterback that you played with that you caught a touchdown pass from?
Absolutely not. I think I played with like 18 quarterbacks.
Yeah. I looked up. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 quarterbacks.
That I caught a touchdown?
That you caught
all
a
right,
touchdown
let's
from.
Let's go. Jay Cutler.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Orton. Fitz. Chris Sims. Okay. Henny, Matt Moore, and I got one more.
I think you might have named a couple guys that you didn't catch a touchdown
oh,
pass.
No,
who?
I don't think that you caught a touchdown pass from Chris Sims.
I did. Washington, you missed out. 2 touchdowns.
Whoa.
Yep. Cal Warren went down. 2 bombs.
By profootballreference.com.
Did you catch one?
About.
Did
for sure.
That one stupid game that Trestman tried to save his job and have Jimmy Clausen start in like week 15?
I did not catch. Okay. I don't even know if I played.
Yeah, you might not have. That was an all-time moment.
Yeah.
Like, what are we
Can
doing?
Can we go back here?
What are we doing?
Yeah, wait. When did you catch a pass from Chris Sims?
So that was Josh McDaniels' year. That was 2010.
Wait, did you say Josh McCown?
Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, but did you catch one from Josh
Absolutely,
McCown?
Absolutely, in Green
he
Bay.
Did. Yes. Yep.
In Green Bay.
Yes. Yes.
It was a nice back shoulder on the left side. We were getting smashed 50-something to 3.
Josh McCown was, I mean, I love Josh.
I caught a couple of touchdowns from Josh McCown.
Yeah.
You also had... it says Kyle Orton, Jay Cutler, and Jake Plummer are the 3 quarterbacks that you caught touchdown passes from in Denver.
Okay. I don't remember Jake Plummer, but I was going to go back to Jake.
What about Jason Campbell, that game that we got killed by the Niners on Monday Night Football? We got killed. Oh, that was one of my favorite games that you've ever played. Monday Night Football, Jay Cutler, Brandon Marshall in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
3 touchdowns?
3 touchdowns, second half, comeback.
Well,
open the stadium.
I was high.
Actually high?
Yeah, like
2-3 Toradols.
Oh.
Painkillers. I wasn't supposed to play that game. I was supposed to be out 6 weeks. The game before, I high ankle sprain. And I just asked Phil Emery, and coach was like, yo, just give me to, you know, pregame to show that I can play. So only it was only 3 catches, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. It was it was the comeback. I got to look it up. It was they opened the stadium. It was the first game.
100%. 100%. I had 3 catches, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, Monday Night Football. That was one of my favorite games that you had.
Yep.
And what's last question? Like, you looking back at your career, you've been out for a couple of years now. Like what's – oh, yeah, those fourth quarter, 21 points. I'm looking back at the box score right now. You had 5 catches, 48 yards, 3 touchdowns.
5 catches?
You were so high you don't even remember how many catches you had.
I know. I always
But it were big-ass touchdowns. Like, yeah.
I shouldn't have done that.
You had
to play a football game.
You had two touchdown catches in the fourth quarter. Looking back on your career, what's the one thing you're like regret or like, man, I should have done that differently? Is there anything that sticks out that you're like, shit, that could have gone better?
Yeah, I mean, that like football is big business, and I think as players, a lot of our players where we come from, it's not business, it's personal. Like, how do I separate the personal and the business when football is the reason why my mom eats or my sister, you know, has a roof over her head, right? And that's the reality, is like the things that drove me every single day, whether it was 5 a.m. mat drills or even that navigated me in the streets where it's like, yo, you can go this way, but you might throw your career away and you ain't gonna be able to take care of your family. Like, how do I separate, you know, that football, the business around it, and the personal? Because it saved my life. It saved, you know, the people around me, their lives, right? Like, literally. And it's hard. So in those moments, whether it's on the sideline, you know, it's hard to, when a coach, like whether it's Bruce Arians, you know, with AB saying, get the fuck out of here, and saying, you're done, do the throat slashing thing. Like, now you go, is this personal? Who are you talking to? So I wish back then, I wouldn't even say I wish. I mean, and it's not even a regret because I understand it, right? Like, a lot of people may not understand it, you know, but it's just who I am, you know? And, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, and, you know, I had to survive and I had to thrive. And when you come from a place like that, you know, those are the skills that you have. So, like, I'm a product of my environment. So, you know, the one thing I look back on my career is like, damn, that there was some tough moments, or when I lost control, you know, and I let my emotions get the best of me, right? And that's one of the things that I wanted to, you know, sit down and share with Antonio Brown, was that is like, I get it. I understand it. No one understands it more. But you got to understand, like, now you're not in control of the moment, because now we're just talking about you. Is something wrong? Is CTE, mental health, et cetera, right? So I think when I look back, you know, the emotions got the best of me sometimes the first half of my career.
That's, I mean, it's a good, like, big picture lesson. You could also just say, don't wear pajama pants when you're going to get videotaped once in the balls.
Oh, bro.
That was an all-time.
That was my thing.
Yeah, it was.
That was my thing. I used to wear pajama pants.
I know. In that clip when you were – that was the end of Denver, right?
That's right. I used to warm up in pajama pants.
Yeah, yeah. In the end of Denver. The Josh McDaniels days were weird times in Denver. Very weird
but
times.
But that started before Josh McDaniels.
Right?
Pajama pants.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm saying like his, everything kind of fell apart there. Yeah. Yeah.
So you played for Mike Shanahan there. Actually, Tony Scheffler told us that he had a tanning bed inside his house. And when he would throw parties, because he'd throw like an annual party for all the players to go to, he would show off. He'd take people on the tour and be like, yeah, this is my tanning bed in my house. Did you ever see the tanning bed?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was like a 16,000 square foot home. It was some of the best parties. I ran to Coach Shanahan couple months ago in Denver, and I was like, Coach, you got to do that party again.
Legendary. People loved him.
Mm-hmm. Legendary.
It feels like anyone who played for him is like, he was the best.
Brandon Marshall here on Parting My Take. All right. Listen, download, subscribe, listen to this phenomenal episode and all the other episodes. These dudes been on the air for forever.
Facts.
Parting My Take.
I love download it. I Am Athlete. Go listen to I Am Athlete and watch Brandon Marshall with our good friend Julian Edelman inside the NFL.
Yeah.
Thanks, B. Marsh.
I think you might have missed Fitzy and Russell Wilson.
No, I said Fitz.
You said Fitz.
Oh, I did.
Russ Wilson.
Russ, yeah, Russ.
Was that weird at the end of your career?
Like, I forgot,
there's
yes.
certain guys that finish their careers on teams that you don't expect them to play for. And,
oh,
like, picturing
man.
You in a Seahawks uniform, I feel like...
It was, like, awkward.
Jerry yeah, you Rice look at it, and you're like, this doesn't look,
yeah, right.
This doesn't look right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah,
thank
you,
guys.
Caught
yeah.
one touchdown from him.
Mm-hmm. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car-selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
T, get 25% off.
Okay, let's wrap up. We got FAQs. Henry.
I always wondered and hoped that he was talking to us, but when PFT says love you guys, is he talking to the fans or the group?
He's looking directly in our eye. He actually, if you watch on the YouTube, which we had a pre-show today, which was very hilarious, go subscribe and like. He takes off his glasses just a little bit, locks eyes with every single one of us, and says, love you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the real answer is I'll never tell. That's for me to know and for you to find out.
Well, some of you aren't loved, and you should talk to a therapist about it.
It says more about you that you're asking that question. It seems like you're insecure.
Needy much?
That I haven't been saying it to you.
Not an FAQ, but a lot of Qs. My buddy is in charge of sports for our local YMCA. They're short coaches, so he wants me to volunteer. It's 11 under co-ed. I'm 100% committed to building a dynasty. Now I need to know answers to the following. What offense should I run? Do I let everyone play? Do I wear a suit or sweats? And how much conditioning do I make them do?
I think you got to go sweats.
Co-ed? What?
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
You go full jumpsuit.
Wait, did he say CYO? What sport are we talking about? Basketball?
Basketball.
I would say maybe just chill out. They'll probably remember you more if you're just cool and try to teach them something than build the dynasty.
How old are these?
11.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
That's right on the age. You don't want to be too much of a hardo.
Yeah, I would just... You know, make sure they all get to play.
Yeah. Well, no, you don't have to do that. 11, I think, 11, is right around the age where you
locate your best player and just feed them the rock.
Yeah, 11 is right when you can be like, all right, you can play a little bit, but not all the time. But yeah, don't be a dick. This guy sounds like he might go too hard.
Mm-hmm. Just practice strictly buzzer beaters, and no matter what the game is, if they just hit buzzer beaters, it's going to be electric no matter what.
That would be funny if you just do, like, if you just only shoot from half court.
Or,
and then the Kings will hire you or something.
Or if your team just straight up does it, a verbal countdown every time you have the ball and goes like 3, 2,
yeah.
1. So every shot you get to practice hitting at the buzzer. Also, try doing the get on all fours and bark like a dog play.
Mm-hmm.
One team does that. And as far as the internet has told me, that play has never failed.
This is actually serious. If you really want to be a dynasty and don't like be a dick about it and run them too hard, teach them all how to shoot sky hooks. You can't guard it. You would not be able to guard it. Skyhooks for everyone. Like, imagine if you just run an offense where you just feed the post and skyhook mm-hmm. over everyone. It'd be awesome.
So, on offense, run the skyhook offense. On defense, just play zone.
Yeah.
And kids will not know what to do with a zone. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Do the... Now, Jake, is it a 1-3-1 zone? Because there's been a lot of people that have been arguing over this, my mentions over the last
couple
years.
There's different.
I think you can go 2-3 with 11-year-olds.
Yeah, but what is the Syracuse zone technically?
2-3 zone.
Yeah.
It's a 2-3 zone because people are like, it's really a 1-3-1 zone.
Or you can go, or you can fuck them up.
Change it a little bit.
The best is running a box in one. Just have your best defender on their best player.
Whatever it is.
You don't know if you're man or...
I think you need to bring back the memes for this home stretch.
I will. Yeah, the triangle in two if it's a really good player. But yeah, just play zone defense and no one will know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite place you've ever lived for each of you?
I mean, it's Madison because of college.
Right? Manhattan, New York.
Yeah. I mean, it's college was very fun. I hope people had fun at college.
I didn't go to college. My college experience was on a bus. Well, I went to college for a year.
Was it fun?
Yeah.
So there you go.
Wasn't my favorite place I lived, though.
Yeah, I agree. I like Harrisonburg. It's a lovely town. When it doesn't smell like dog food.
Go to a fun college. That's what I would say.
I would say Austin. Austin is a great city. It might not be that cool anymore. I don't know. I've heard rumors that maybe it's not. But
no, Austin was great in the late 2000s.
Speaking of Brooks, when is the Brooks versus Dave golf outing happening?
Next question.
It's never.
Not.
It's never. Yes. I don't think we ever really Dave, followed up on the show, but
Brooks did.
There's beef.
Yeah, he did it with Bryson, and he got injured and couldn't do it with Dave, and then they said they were going to reschedule, and Dave, I think, yeah. So that's beef. That's beef. That's real beef, I believe.
The answer is never.
Yeah.
What's up, fellas? What's the best dish / food to serve?
We should play Brooks. Scramble, us four.
Yeah.
Which four?
I'm in.
Who's the fourth?
Well, Jake's a good golfer, right?
Well, yeah. Hank, you and Bubba aren't content.
True. Yeah, that's true. You're out.
I'm very confused. But we should do that. I don't know where I stand on that.
Jake, are you good?
I'm all right.
We should play. Here's what we do. It's me, Big Cat, Jake, and Hank, and Billy's all of our caddies. So he carries four bags at once.
And we get to throw the ball once a hole.
That'd be sick.
Off the green, yeah.
No, anywhere.
Even we can putt. We can hand putt.
Yeah, I think we probably want to use it for our short game.
One throw a game.
Yeah,
one
if we're 40 yards away, I think that's a throw.
The old hand wedge.
Yeah.
I had the best round of my life with the new layer of the goldfish part of my take. Head covers over
beautiful.
Thanksgiving.
All right, so we're going to buy them on the barstool store. Shit out of
those are unreal. Brooks.
All right, Brooks, if you're listening, the gauntlet has been thrown down.
Who wins? Scramble of us and Max versus Brooks. Brooks, easily?
Yeah, probably it's basically the same thing. All right, we'll go with this last one.
Does Max get to throw one ball per hole? Because I'd say
help his game.
I think it would help, yeah.
Yeah.
Would you rather be the guy in your favorite sports moment, but that's all you have for your career? So it's only one play, but it's legendary, like the Butler pick in Super Bowl or Stephon Matto's goal in Rangers Stanley Cup. Don't know who that is.
Okay.
Or get paid a crazy amount of money, whatever's considered a crazy amount of money to you.
Easy. Get paid a crazy amount of money.
Yeah.
It's not even close, because if I'm the guy in my memory, then that memory, like I still have the memory if I'm
Malcolm
rich.
Butler. Yeah, but you are Malcolm Butler.
Yeah, but you, Hank, imagine.
What's your favorite sports memory?
I think it would get annoying after a while. Like to have everyone be like, remember that time that you did it? And it's like, yeah, I did other things. Like, no, you have that one play. Making a lot of money would be cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's also a tough question to answer.
Like, Joe Carter walk-off home run.
But Joe Carter was, like, an incredible baseball player.
Favorite sports moment, but that's all you have for your career. So it's like Joe Carter.
You could pick, I'd be Michael Jordan.
No, but, like, Michael Jordan, like, what's the defining moment of his career?
It wouldn't be Michael Jordan. You would be Big Cat on that Bulls team, making that one shot that Michael Jordan. So you don't get his entire career.
Yeah, see, I still think that.
So I would be.
If you could pick the amount of money,
I'd be Randy Johnson. I would have killed a bird.
Yeah. Some things are bigger than money.
I'd be Tiger Woods in a Perkins.
It's for love of the game, Big Cat.
I think it would be annoying. I think it would be awesome to be that guy, but I think it would eventually get annoying to be the guy that's only remembered for one thing.
Yeah.
And always having to talk about that one thing.
Plus, I enjoy all of my sports memories that I have. That's what makes them so great. If I was just way, way, way richer and I'd still have those sports memories, I would take that easily over me having done one thing in one game one time.
I would just buy my favorite teams, too.
Good point.
It's the fact that there's no cap to the money makes it easy. If you said $10 million and it's like, okay, now this is a real debate, but if it's like you can have a $10 billion and you can buy whatever team you want, that'd be sick.
No cap.
All right, numbers.
17.
Julian Edelman on Friday. 44. Conference championship.
Someone told
preview.
Me I was being problematic for keeping choosing 88.
22.
31. 84 and 26.
26. Sorry.
6-9.
22. 49. Good football number. I wish we had a guy around here who could tell us about football numbers.
Oh, it's a new number.
Oh!
Scoregami.
Number gami. Ball gami.
Love you guys.
Polar bears are shot on sight in Iceland.
Whoa. Fade on sight.
Damn.
You want to know what it feels like to be in war mode? Feels like wrestling a 600-pound greased-up grizzly bear in the nude after you shotgun 17 Coors Light and AC/DC's hit 1990 song Thunderstruck plays in the background somehow. Feels like getting in a full-on fist fight with your stepdad, Rick, because it won't let you take creatine and flip NFTs anymore. Fuck you, Rick! You don't know shit about crypto. Feels like sticking your dick in a ceiling fan going full speed out of anger because your football coach moved you from quarterback to wide receiver because you could only bench 215 and can't identify a cover 2 defense for shit. And if you've never fought a retired 57-year-old baseball player with bad shoulders, then you don't know what war mode feels like. And you can fuck right off back to Pussy Pants Island.
It's Pardon My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.